Welcome to the First Friday for October 2008. The First Friday is produced by the Georgia Department of Defense with news about the Georgia Army National Guard, the Georgia Air National Guard, and the Georgia State Defense Force. I'm Amanda Kenny.
And I'm Army Sergeant Tracy Smith.
In this edition, Georgia State Defense Force soldiers team with local officials to search for a decorated Iraq War veteran missing for more than 2 years.
And the Georgia Army National Guard deactivates the last UH-1 helicopter and honors the pilots of this versatile war course of war and peace.
These stories and more coming up, but first.
The state of Georgia has been moving aggressively to help refugees of the nation of Georgia who suffered because of the recent hostilities with Russia. 1,200 pounds of emergency supplies were packed at Dobbins Air Reserve Base this month and distributed to more than 9,000 permanently displaced refugees living in tents and makeshift shelters in Georgia. The medical supplies, protective clothing, and first aid kits are part of a larger humanitarian aid package of supplies donated by USAID for International Development, U.S. Public Health Service, and the Georgia National Guard.
Delivery coordination was a collaborative effort with the Atlanta-Tbilisi Sister City Committee with the help of the Georgia National Guard. Six prominent Georgians were honored by National Guard Association of the United States during the National Conference held in Baltimore, September 20th to 24th, 2008. The honorees received the prestigious Patrick Henry Award, recognizing local officials and civic leaders who distinguished themselves in outstanding service to the Armed Forces of the United States, the National Guard, or the National Guard Association. The six Georgians honored include retired Major General David B. Poitras of Atlanta, Brigadier General Verlin Slayton, also retired, of Morrow, Bill Cathcart of Savannah, Milton Woody Woodside of Brunswick, Michael Fowler of Marietta, and Clyde Taylor of Macon. Republican presidential candidate John McCain was a guest speaker at the prestigious event. McCain recognized the sacrifices of Guardsmen and women, accepting the calling that defined the citizen soldiers of the National Guard through their brave and faithful service.
This means a national leadership that respects and treats our governors and adjutant generals as partners in national homeland security policy making rather than as impediments and intruders. Of policies, practices, and customs that fail to promote a seamless total force based on cooperation, jointness, and the mutual respect that all components, including the Guard and Reserve, have earned with their blood and bravery.
Georgia Senator Saxby Chambliss was also honored by the association with the distinguished 2008 Harry S. Truman Award, which is the association's highest honor. It's given to those civilian and military leaders who demonstrate continued contributions to national defense and security. The 2008 award recognized Senator Chambliss for his support of National Guard issues and priorities, and spotlighted legislation he championed in the Senate to benefit the National Guard and Reserve. The legislation includes reintegration initiatives for Guard and Reserves returning from active duty in support of current conflicts and family support benefit programs, recognizing the multiple deployments citizens in uniform have endured.
Chambliss also introduced the National Guard and Reserve Retirement Modernization Act in April 2007 to reduce the age of retirement pay by 3 months for every 90 days a Guard or Reserve member spends on active duty. Once passed, he asked that it be retroactive to September 11, 2001.
That's British Territorial Army 4 Yorkshire Regimental Sergeant Major John Gilpin sounding the call to attention during training in Carnoustie, Scotland, home to the British Open and the UK Ministry of Defence's Barry Bowden Training Camp. A contingent company of soldiers for the Savannah-based 118th Field Artillery traveled to Scotland to learn alongside their British counterparts as part of their annual training in mid-September. The 4 Yorks, as they are called, are on deck to serve in Afghanistan with the 48th Infantry Brigade in 2009. The lads and lasses learned how the British, who have been a driving force in the Helmand province, make it, well, do what it do. Combat tactics and familiarization with the SA-80 were part of the training schedule.
They also got to visit Edinburgh Castle at the end of the Royal Mile and take part in a centuries-old tradition of the 1 o'clock firing of the Royal Guns. a time marker complement to the older falling time ball, which dates back to the days of sailing.
The complete story of the training and what the dedicated 48th Infantry Artillerymen took from it all can be read in your October Georgia First Friday briefing, now online.
Georgia's 4th Civil Support Team, 202nd Explosive Ordnance Disposal Unit, and 138th Chemical Company teamed up with local, state, and federal emergency management agencies for 2 days of hands-on training. The group used what used to be the Army Corps of Engineers building just outside the gates of Dobbins Air Reserve Base. The CST was able to set up several scenarios involving terrorists with biochemical capabilities to train the responders how to deal with the situations. As the Georgia Army National Guard moves ever closer to being fully manned, they celebrate a 150% success in recruiting for the 2008 fiscal year. The Air National Guard saw a 9% increase in their manpower from 2007 to 2008. Even throughout all of this success, there was a transfer of power, and Lieutenant Colonel Thomas Carden stepped down as the commander of the Army's Recruiting and Retention Command and made way for Lieutenant Colonel Anthony Abbott to take the reins.
Being in the National Guard has always been a family affair. Many serve in separate units or even separate states. But Staff Sergeant Leslie Blasini is lucky enough to serve side by side with his son, Sergeant Antonio Blasini, and both are deployed with the 278th Military Police Company in Iraq. Both men started as active duty Marines, and soon after the attacks of September 11th, they both volunteered and joined the National Guard. When the unit deployed in August, Antonio was just a specialist, but soon after, his father proudly pinned the rank of sergeant on his son's chest. More about the Blasinis can be found in this month's First Friday briefing.
If it ain't raining, we ain't training. Or at least that's what the 48th Battle Staff and Battalion Leadership were overheard saying day one of their leadership certification course at Fort Benning.
Now the motto of the legendary infantry school there is, "Follow me." But the deputy commander of the 48th Brigade Volunteers said that between Mother Nature developing a strained sense of humor and the physical demands, the motto for training should have been more along the lines of, "Ouch!"
The physical and mental thrashing was part of the train-the-trainer preparations for the Volunteers' 2009 Afghanistan mission. The deployment will put junior NCOs and squad leaders in more non-traditional leadership positions, sometimes finding themselves training Afghan soldiers or in the battlefield with situations with our international coalition partners.
Tactical seamless transitioning is important in the ongoing war on terror, and the tip of the spear, the Air National Guard's 139th Intelligence Squadron, put their mental metal to work in a 2-day workshop designed to foster cohesiveness with the 31st Intelligence Squadron, their active duty counterparts. The squadrons used real-world situations, practical formulas, tools, and models to achieve results and build positive relationships. The goal? Yield positive results in their area of responsibility in combat.
The last UH Iroquois Huey helicopter in the Georgia Army National Guard Aviation Arsenal flew out of Winder, Georgia, towards Texas and an uncertain future.
The aerial workhorse of the Vietnam era is being replaced in theory by the Black Hawk. The 422 medical evacuation chopper will make its final flight, piloted by the man who first got behind the controls some 30 years ago, Chief Warrant Officer 4 Jim Brennan, and an all-volunteer crew.
Another point in this helo's history so special to Brennan is that the 422's right cockpit door bears the name of fellow Vietnam vet and Huey pilot Chief Warrant Officer 4, Gary Horowitz. He and Horowitz made their last flight together in Huey 422 in February 1999. A month later, Horowitz, who suffered from cancer, died. With 422 going away, the 832nd intends to stencil Horowitz's name on aircraft 229 to make it his new namesake.
With the transition, Brennan says the day is bittersweet to him and his and Horowitz's families. But throughout his career, whether he flew in combat maneuvers or to assist those who needed emergency aid, he knew he could always depend on his family, his friends, and his employer to support him, no matter what.
It's been a great career there. I've had supportive bosses over the years, supportive company. They support the guard. Walking out the door, said, "Be careful. See you when you get back." So, and that's something a lot of people don't have as M-Day soldiers, that they sometimes are concerned with their civilian job. And with me, that's one thing I never had to worry about.
And that's the First Friday Briefing Podcast for October 2008. The First Friday is produced by the Georgia Department of Defense Directorate of Communications. If you have comments or questions, we welcome them. Email us at doc, that's D-O-C, at ga.ngb.army.mil. I'm Amanda Kenney.
And I'm Army Sergeant Tracy Smith. On behalf of citizen soldiers throughout Georgia, thank you for listening.